Today on Vox Talks Economics, how much should we pay our CEOs? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe. Follow us on Instagram as well. So what motivates CEOs? Do they want to be fabulously rich, or are they just looking for a fair reward for what they achieve? And if fairness really does matter to them, how do you write a contract about that? Pierre Chagnon of Queen's University in Canada is one of the authors of a new discussion paper that explores what fair CEO pay is, and he joins me now. Pierre, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim.
Pierre, there's been plenty of previous research into CEOs, hasn't there? They sort of fascinate us. They're not quite like us, but they live among us. But there is research about what motivates them and how that should be reflected in their pay. What has that research focused on and what has it concluded?
Okay, so indeed it's a very big literature going back to the 70s. Mm-hmm. And Michael Jensen from Harvard, I think it's fair to say that he has been driving this research agenda. And so he wrote a paper in the JFE 1976 in which he focused on the implications of managerial behavior for the agency costs within firms. And the point he made is that the interest of the manager might not be aligned with the interest of the firm. And so in 1990, he wrote another paper in the Harvard Business Review with Kevin Murphy, entitled, so it's a great title, the whole paper is in the title, it's CEO incentives. It's not how much you pay, but how. Okay. And there, so they apply the agency theory perspective to CEO compensation. Mm-hmm. And so they consider CEO pay not so much for the absolute level of CEO pay, but really from a corporate governance perspective, mm-hmm. such that the purpose is to align interest. It's to create value for the firm, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why they focus on the structure of pay. So the incentives provided by CEO pay rather than the level of CEO pay. And so most of the research in this area really views CEO pay as a solution to a moral hazard problem, uh-huh. a principal agent problem. So when there is an agency relationship between the board of the firm and the CEO. And so here's a problem that the board faces is that the board and the CEO have different preferences, right? There is a divergence of interest. For example, the CEO may rather go golfing or fly around the world rather than work hard. Or he may enjoy some perks on the job. So, for example, he might want to buy a private jet with the company's money. He may engage in nepotism. Lots of things he could do. And so the board wants to discourage these actions, right, which are detrimental to the firm. And so the literature says that the board wants to elicit effort from the CEO. But so effort here is very broadly defined, right? It's not just working hard. It can be all these things I mentioned that the CEO enjoys, but which are not good for the firm. And so most of the previous research has studied CEO pay in this context. So CEO pay is viewed as the solution to the principal agent problem. So you have pay for performance to align interest between the CEO and the firm. And the last question, so how do you achieve pay for performance? So do you use, for example, stocks? Do you use options? Which instruments? And here, what's interesting is that, so Ingolf Dittmann and Ernst Mach published a paper in 2007 in the Journal of Finance in which they find that the standard moral hazard model fails to explain the structure of CEO pay that we observe in practice. So in other words, the predictions of this theoretical model, as it was back then at least, are inconsistent. They are irreconcilable with the empirical evidence. So there needs to be something else.
And one thing that strikes you about this is that we have a single lever to extract effort from a CEO, which is basically money. Your paper goes beyond this. What is wrong with the intuition that it's money that motivates the CEO? Because, I mean, that's how economists model work for, well, all the rest of us.
So first of all, I think we should say that CEOs do care about money, right? We are not arguing that they that they do not.
Yeah.
And I think this explains why CEO wages are so high. So for example, there's this paper by Xavier Gabay and Augustin Andier, Why Has CEO Pay Increased So Much? In which they rationalize this increase in CEO pay simply on this basis and a few other things as well, right? So again, when you take a corporate governance perspective, so when you consider the problem of incentive provision or motivation for the CEO, So the question you're asking is a bit different. The question you're asking is whether a bit more money would change some decisions made by the CEO.
Exactly, yes.
And so, of course, a bit more money from a CEO perspective might be different from a bit more money from, you know, our perspective. But you're still really thinking at the margin. So it's not between having $10 million or zero, but it's rather between having $10 million, so if you make a good decision for the firm, or let's say $9.5 million. If you make a bad decision for the firm. And so the question you're asking is really, so what are the determinants of this type of decision? Mm-hmm. And here, what was really interesting, that was really the starting point for us where we thought about this paper, was the empirical survey of CEO pay by my co-author, Alex Edmonds, and his co-authors on that survey, so Tom Gosling and Dirk Genter. And it was very useful. It's super interesting. So it's untitled, if you want to look it up, CEO Compensation Evidence from the Field. Mm-hmm. And so they found that the prospect of monetary gains for the CEO is not a major determinant of CEO effort. So it's not what motivates CEOs the most. And part of the reason for that, I think, is because CEOs are already very wealthy, right? They get appointed to this position after a successful career. And when you already have a lot of wealth, so having more is nice, but it's not going to necessarily be transformative. It's not going to completely change your lifestyle. They care about money, but not as much, and especially not so much in the context of making decisions for the firm.
So how do we characterize that other motivation, the sort of thing that makes a CEO excel, that makes them want to perform?
To answer this question, the survey that I just mentioned is super useful, right? And so what they found is that intrinsic motivation and personal reputation of the CEO, not the prospect of monetary gains, are really the most important determinants of CEO effort. Mm-hmm. What they also find is that the intrinsic motivation of the CEO is adversely affected when pay is below a level that the CEO views as fair. So here, perceptions really do matter, right? Mm. And another point that CEOs are not really concerned about the change in their bank account per se, but in that perspective, they are more concerned about being treated fairly. Mm-hmm. And of course, being paid fairly is a big part of that, right? That can depend on the context, as you can imagine. So for example, where you live, so a fair level of pay in Scandinavia might be different than in the US for a CEO. And so the bottom line is that unfair pay is a strong demotivator. So you really want to avoid that in general. And that was a novel finding from the survey. And it's quite surprising given the ways that we researchers think about CEO pay usually, right? And this is what motivated us to start working on this research project, to better understand how CEO compensation should be designed. So when CEOs have these fairness concerns.
Yeah, but all of a sudden this gets very difficult, doesn't it? Because I suppose there's an aspect where a CEO could recognize a fair contract when she sees it, but that's not a guide to designing the contract. So what would a fair CEO contract be designed to achieve?
That's a good question. So when you think about a fair contract, so the starting point is that the CEO is going to compare her actual level of pay to a fair level of pay. Mm-hmm. And the idea that she will suffer displeasure or a disutility, whatever you want to call it, if her pay falls below a perceived level which is fair.
Yeah.
The second point is that this fair level of pay is not a fixed amount. So the survey tells us that this fair level of pay depends on firm performance in the way that you would expect, right? So a better performance will increase the fair level of pay. It's fair to reward a good performance and also to punish adequately, so no more, no less, but to punish a bad performance. And this has two consequences. So first, the CEO will be motivated to do a good job running the firm if she's paid fairly. Mm-hmm. And second, the CEO will be more likely to want to work for the firm and remain at this firm if she's paid fairly. Okay, so a fair contract will be designed for two purposes. So to provide incentives and also to attract and retain the CEO. And how do you achieve that? So in the context of our models, this is achieved by pay for performance. And this is a new justification for pay for performance. Under the traditional justification from agency theory, right, where people only care about money, pay for performance is only useful to provide incentives. If you want to attract or retain someone, you're just going to increase their level of pay. You're just going to increase their fixed wage. You don't need to increase the sensitivity of their pay to their performance, right? But what we show is that a fair contract would also include pay for performance, even if hypothetically, the board did not care about providing incentives to the CEO. That was not really an objective of the contract, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so this actually addresses the criticism that CEOs should not require incentives to do a good job, right? Might be true, but that they still need to be paid fairly. And this fair level of pay will depend on their performance. And so in normal, so you have pay for performance, but it is not primarily driven by incentive constraints. And instead, it is driven by fairness concerns. And this has different implications.
So this is the point in a podcast where both of us might start waving our hands about and no one can see that. Can you describe what a fair pay model for a CEO would be?
Yes. So at first, so we start with a pretty simple model in which we try to make things as simple and transparent as possible. So what we do is that we extend a standard model used in corporate finance and corporate governance. And so in this model, so the fair wage is a linear function of performance. And so essentially, if you are paid a fair wage, you are paid a constant fraction of firm value. And how do you achieve that? You can do it in many ways, but one of the ways is simply to give equity in the firm to the CEO. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, the CEO is going to own 2% of the firm. That's pretty easy. That's actually consistent with what we observe in practice. So then we extend the model, we study other cases, then we can have a fair wage, which is a non-linear function of performance. So it's still increasing in performance, but not necessarily linearly. The main insights remain the same, just to keep it short.
That's fair. Is it also the optimal contract that should be written for a CEO?
On the one hand, so there are strong arguments for paying a CEO fairly.
Yes.
But as we just discussed, so it's going to allow you to attract and retain the CEO. It may help you provide incentives. But all this being said, so the answer to this question is no, right? You should not always pay the CEO fairly, or at least not always.
That's a wonderful thing to say. Explain it to me.
The idea is that unfair pay can motivate the CEO. Now, so remember, here's there's still an agency problem, right? The board is still trying to provide incentives.
Yes.
And the idea is that, so if the CEO receives unfair pay following a bad performance, he'll be very strongly motivated to avoid this bad outcome, this bad performance. And so he will make business decisions to make sure it doesn't happen, or at least reduce the chance that it will happen. Mm-hmm. And so remember that unfair pay is costly for two reasons in our model. So the first one is that, well, it's obvious you don't get paid much, relatively speaking. And second, there is the psychological cost, right? You get paid less than what you deserve. And so you really suffer some disutility because of that. Mm-hmm. And so you really want to avoid this. And how do you avoid this if you're the CEO? Well, one way to avoid this outcome is to exert effort, to work hard, to make good decisions, and to try to make sure that, you know, your performance will be good and this will not happen. So unfair pay can be useful to motivate effort. Do we really observe that? So how would you put that into practice? So what would be unfair pay? And so we argue that this is consistent with the use of so-called performance shares. So these are shares, so equity in the firm, that you give to the CEO, but that's only going to vest if firm performance is sufficiently good. So let's say, for example, if stock returns over some period are positive, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And the CEO does not get the shares otherwise, right? So then the shares become worthless to the CEO. So essentially, the associated pay will be zero. And so you really have this type of discontinuity in the pay of the CEO as a function of performance, which is not explained by other models, but that we see in practice with the use of performance shares. And that's consistent with our model.
At the moment, though, whenever you turn on the news and the business news is on, you're quite likely to see a CEO defending the company's poor results, saying, well, there are a lot of unexpected things happening to us. And especially in some sectors that are particularly volatile at the moment, tech businesses, for example. CEOs would claim on that, well, it's just bad luck. Is it okay to protect CEOs from the consequences of bad luck? Because in your optimal contract, then the consequences might be pretty bad.
Yes, it's true. But then, so the question you need to ask is, does bad luck affect what would be perceived as a fair level of pay?
Uh-huh.
And to do that, so you have to get back to the data and again to the survey by Alex and his co-authors that I already mentioned. In this survey, they find that it is fair for the CEO to share in some of the consequences of good or bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, not all of the consequences, right? They're still somehow protected, but they should participate in the consequences of good or bad luck for the firm. And so here, I think the idea that the CEO should also be exposed to the risk that shareholders are exposed to. It seems fair.
Everyone else gets exposed to bad luck because they might lose their jobs as well, not just the shareholders. So yeah, there doesn't seem to be a reason to protect CEOs from that completely. Now, is what you're doing here, is it a thought experiment so we can say how far the contracts that we see in real life are from what would be optimal? Or is this, as you seem to be saying, already reflected in some of the way that we structure CEO pay?
The goal of this research project is to offer a new perspective on CEO pay, right? So explain how compensation is structured. So this is a positive aspect of the model, but the model also has a normative aspect, right? So the positive aspect would be to say, so we can explain performance shares. So in real life, so, you know, CEO pay can be calibrated in the ways that we predict. The normative aspect of the model, so it's really relevant if the model becomes influential, right? If it starts to affect the way that boards approach CEO contract, then so I think there's other implications, right? The fact that, for example, even in the context of fairness concerns, it can be optimal to pay zero for a very low performance, right? So this type of insights. So I think it's worth remembering that the paper by Jenton and Murphy in the Harvard Business Review in 1990 that I mentioned at the beginning of the talk was very influential, right? It was credited for the rise in stock option-based pay in the 90s, right? They re-emphasize, look, it's really important to provide incentives to the CEO if you care about corporate governance and incentivizing CEOs. And that was really transformative, right? And so hopefully the point we're making about fairness that gets you to consider CEO pay in a new perspective and maybe to change some of the aspect of CEO compensation can also gain traction in the future.
In May 2022, we spoke to Pierre's co-author, Alex Edmonds, about a different group of high-achieving individuals. Listen to our episode titled, What is the Purpose of a Finance Professor?
Another aspect of corporate governance that we see increasingly in the last few years been the shareholder revolt, where activist shareholders, sometimes even institutional shareholders, and also some economists object to levels of CEO pay because they claim that a particular CEO is being rewarded for failure. Based on your work, do you think they've got a point?
I'll give you the economist answer, which is that it depends. But now I'm going to tell you on what it depends. If CEO compensation primarily solves an incentive problem, then they do have a point. And this is what I mentioned before, right? This is that unfair pay can be a strong demotivator, right? So you offer, for example, performance shares, which pay zero if firm performance is low. However, if CEO pay is primarily designed not so much for incentive purposes, because you think the CEO is going to work hard regardless, but it's primarily designed to attract and retain the CEO, then you could expect that the CEO is going to be paid fair wages for almost all performances. So that would include, you know, substantial payments, even in cases of failure, of very bad performances. And again, so the reason is that if you don't do that, the CEO may simply not accept the contract or simply quit. You know, and you might think, who would be crazy enough to do that? But if you actually look at negotiations between boards and CEOs, they're already contacting people who are in very high demand. And so CEOs have some bargaining power. You know, if you really want to appoint someone really good, you cannot just tell them, you know, take it or leave it. Often you have to engage in negotiation. And then you have to take into account these fairness concerns.
Not all of us can be CEOs, but everyone would like to see fairness, and they would like to see that fairness recognized in their working lives. So does your model apply only to CEOs, or is it good for the rest of us as well?
We designed our model for CEOs, and the reason for that is that our starting point was really this empirical survey on CEO pay, right? And the fact that some of the findings were contrary to what many of us researchers or in the public would expect. But it's true that there are other applications, right? Because some of the messages, some of the assumptions are also true, not just for CEOs, but also for other employees. And I think that one of these messages is that pay needs to be adjusted depending on performance. And even if incentives are not really an issue, right? So what would happen if it's not the case? Well, in this case, so your employees who are high performers might not necessarily quit their job, but they'll not work that hard anymore, right? If they are not paid fairly. So, you know, for example, the quiet quitting phenomenon right now. So yes, that would be an example of that, right? So in practice, so how do you increase pay? So often this is achieved by promotions, right? So someone will be promoted. And so this could explain why the highest performers are promoted, even sometimes regardless of their ability at the next step of the ladder, right? Whether they will be good as a manager simply because they were good as a baseline employee. Mm-hmm. But so this is the way in which this is often achieved in practice. But even in context in which this is not possible, right? You cannot necessarily promote every employee, every high performer. It's still worth remembering that employees expect to be paid fairly and they may retaliate if they are not. For example, I'm not talking about, you know, really bad actions, but they will not work very hard. They will not go over and beyond if they are not paid fairly for, you know, good performance. And so when performance is going to differ substantially across employees, so one of the implications that having a flat pay scale, which is often viewed as quite equitable, so it's not necessarily fair.
Yeah, this is one of those topics you're hearing a lot about in the last few years. How are we rewarded for what we do? How are we recognized for what we do? Turns out the answers are a lot more complicated than they might seem at first, but it's also a fascinating problem. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Tim.
The paper is called A Theory of Fair CEO Pay, and the authors are Pierre Chagnon, Alex Edmonds, and Daniel Gottlieb. It is discussion paper 17782 at CEPR, and if you want to read an article about it written by the authors, then there is a Vox EU column. It was published in January 2023, same name, A Theory of Fair CEO Pay.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the best new research in economics every week. So subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, why not leave a review? Next week on Vox Talks, the countries that are reevaluating their approach to offshoring.